Welcome back to Good Food. There's a reason why so many subsistence farming communities around the globe are in the shape they're in, pushed further to the margins and deeply in debt. Some say that much of the blame can be laid at the feet of a revolution that was touted as being a savior for small farmers, but instead became a double-edged sword, the Green Revolution. With her book, The Globalization of Wheat, Marcy Baranski looks at that supposed miracle with a critical eye and brings new light to a controversial concept in agricultural science. Hi.
Hi, Evan. Thanks so much for having me here today.
The subtitle of your book is a critique of the Green Revolution. So let's start with an explanation of what the Green Revolution was.
Yeah, the Green Revolution was really a profound transformation in global agriculture, starting in about the 1940s and going through the 1970s, and mainly affecting Latin America and South and Southeast Asia. And this transformation happened mainly through the use of the adoption of chemical fertilizers, adoption of fertilizer-responsive crop varieties, and the expansion of irrigation. But it was also enabled by various agricultural policy and land reforms happening at the country level.
And when you talk about the Green Revolution, you talk about wide adaptation. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what that means?
Yeah. Before the Green Revolution, most scientists were working in a very local area on the assumption that the crops that they're breeding or developing really can't go much further than that area. Wide adaptation was a concept really popularized by Norman Borlaug, an American scientist who was working in Mexico and is really known as the father of the Green Revolution. And he found that certain wheat varieties could be grown over many, many countries, spanning continents in a way that had never happened before. And he called this wide adaptation. It was the idea that a crop can still have high or at least adequate yields in different locations, but also different conditions ranging from different levels of fertilizers or irrigated or unirrigated.
So this idea of wide adaptation happens in lockstep with this encouragement to use certain adaptogenic fertilizers and just more chemical fertilizers in general, along with irrigation, instead of relying on natural rain cycles. Who had access to really exploit all of this to produce large crops on a regular basis?
Well, as you can imagine, the wealthier or more commercially oriented farmers are the ones who are more able to afford fertilizers or have access to irrigation. And the Green Revolution it's a bit complicated because you have many people who are working for these humanitarian goals of reducing hunger and increasing food production. But the strategy that they chose in many places could be called betting on the strong, where they really targeted these farmers that were most likely to go to become commercially oriented first, and we're trying to transform them really from a peasant style of agriculture to a commercial agriculture. And this was done under the premise that this would have, say, trickle-down effects to people who weren't so commercially oriented, such as being able to hire smaller farmers for labor or just reducing overall food prices so that urban consumers would be paying less for food.
So you end up having this growth of large players with access to money who begin to produce large crops on a reliable basis. Does all of this wheat stay in these various countries to feed those who need it, or is it exported? And was this the beginning of the globalized food economy?
Yeah, so wheat and rice, which was another major crop during the Green Revolution, these have been traded for probably hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. So the Green Revolution was not the beginning of a trade, but it was really an aim to make countries like India self-sufficient. Because prior to the Green Revolution, the United States was actually shipping you know, maybe millions of tons of wheat to India to help feed their growing population. But there was a concern that as the Dust Bowl happened in the U.S., that the U.S. might not be able to continue to feed India forever. At the same time, India was a newly independent country and also had a goal of feeding itself. So there is definitely an interplay between that global trade or food aid and a want for countries to become self-sufficient in food. And obviously, we really see this play out during the Ukraine crisis as well. But so it wasn't the beginning of the globalization, but it was really the globalization of assistance in the form of actually agricultural science and technology rather than just sending grains.
So what happens when these kind of agricultural technologies come face to face with farmers working in so many different contexts, in so many different places in the world? How do social inequities start to come into play?
Technologies are seldom something that really level the playing field equally. So in agriculture especially, they're always coming into these existing political and socioeconomic structures or just different agroecological areas, some of which are better suited to high levels of fertilizer, to irrigation, and others which are less suited to that. And so what I found with these Green Revolution varieties is that while they did produce on average pretty good yields, they were much less suited to these more marginal areas than the local varieties. And when we're facing something like climate change today, the way that our agricultural research systems have evolved is very much focused on these, what you can call ideal conditions or the commercial farmers. And there's much less support for farmers who are facing these really variable conditions such as drought and heat stress. And so the whole system is really not set up as very resilient. And so when I think about what do we want for the future of agriculture, I think the main thing is that I want us to move on from this concept of one-size-fits-all solutions, especially in agriculture, and to really recognize the diversity inherent in both these agroclimatic and agroecological systems, but also the conditions that farmers are facing and their different capabilities, for example, to adapt to climate change.
Well, thank you so much. It's really a fascinating book with lots of food for thought. Thank you, Marcy.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Marcy R. Baranski is an interdisciplinary scientist and historian working in the field of climate change mitigation in agriculture. Her book is The Globalization of Wheat, A Critical History of the Green Revolution.